And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday smack dab in the middle of your work week, February the 21st, 2018, 2:21, 18, 13 minutes coming up on 14 minutes past the hour. I'm Scott Spears along with you for the ride today for the next 2 hours. And let me do this really quick before we get to our very special guest and special emphasis on the word special. I do want to let you know what's coming up over the next 2 days here on the Now program. Tomorrow at 12:10, we'll be joined by Joe Negri, who was with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for a lot of years, producing music and performing on screen as Handyman Negri. Joe Negri tomorrow at 12:10 p.m., as this week is the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood debuting on television, debuted February 19th, 1968. Joe Negri tomorrow at 12:10. Tomorrow at 1:10, here's one for you, Adlai Stevenson III will be on. Son of Adlai Stevenson II, who you probably remember best during the Cuban Missile Crisis, working for the president at that time, John Kennedy, and also running for president against Dwight Eisenhower twice. That's Adlai Stevenson II. We'll be joined by his son, Adlai Stevenson III, tomorrow at 1:10. And coming up at 1:10 today, did you watch The View on Monday? The View on President's Day had a contest. Presidential impersonations was the theme of the contest. And one person who participated in that was Jim Meskimen. And Jim Meskimen will be on at 1:10 today with his presidential impressions, which he does Obama, George W. Bush, Clinton, Reagan, Carter, Nixon, Kennedy, a whole lot coming up today at 1:10. Now, this hour is going to be a tremendous amount of fun. As we mentioned, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood went on the air February 19th, 1968. So 50 years and 2 days ago it went on the air. The show ceased production August 31st, 2001, 11 days before 9/11. Very interesting. But other than Mr. Rogers himself, probably the best known, best loved character on that program was the mailman with the greatest tagline, speedy delivery, Mr. McFeely, as many of you know who have listened to this station for nearly 4 years now. Mr. McFeely has visited us 3 times, and we hope to see him in studio one day again. But for the 50th anniversary, and with a Mr. Rogers movie coming up, a guy who was there from day one, what a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones, it's been way too long, the man behind the mailman, Mr. McFeely himself, David Newell. David, how are you?
Speedy delivery, Scott. Here I am. 50 years later, here I am.
50 years. Does it feel like 50 years?
No, it doesn't. It went so fast. I mean, I enjoyed every minute of it. And a lot has happened in those 50 years, not only in my own life, but in the world. You know, actually, when we started taping the program in the fall of 67, and then we had a little backlog, so it went on the air February 19th, 1968. You know, we were in the middle of the Vietnam War and the assassinations of Kennedy and Martin Luther King were around that time, and it was a very volatile time. And Fred Rogers addressed that too. He did a program when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated overnight. He wrote it, and it was on the following evening, and it was designed for families to look at with their children, and so he took what was happening in the world when he could, and addressed it, and he's been doing that ever since. And you mentioned 11 days before 9/11, he addressed that too with some PSAs. At the time, PSA is meaning public service announcements, and the one thing that he did, and maybe some of your listeners have seen some of those, or I'm sure you have, he talked about 9/11, And, you know, what could anyone do at home? What could we do? A lot of EMSs went to help. The professionals went to help as best they could. But the average person couldn't do much. But he addressed, and mainly to children, he said, look for the helpers. You know, there was a lot of footage of the people going through the rubble and helping and with what they could. But he said, look for, in times like this, look for the helpers, people who are out helping. And I think that was very helpful advice for children. There was something you could do, at least look for the people who are helping. And he's used television in that way over the years. It was really, I think, a revolutionary program to take to make it a television as personal as he could, that sort of one-on-one communication. Well, you've seen the program, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have too over the years.
David, I want to talk more about 1968 because I had never thought of this in all the times we've been together, but since you mentioned it, we have one of those Fred Rogers PSAs after 9/11, so take a listen. This is what Mr. Rogers did in the wake of the days after the horrible event of 9/11.
Hello, I'm Fred Rogers. Some parents wonder how to handle world news with their young children. Well, we at Family Communications have discovered that when children bring up something frightening, it's helpful right away to ask them what they know about it. We often find that their fantasies are very different from the actual truth. What children probably need to hear most from us adults is that they can talk with us about anything, and that we will do all we can to keep them safe in any scary time. I'm always glad to be your neighbor.
Fred Rogers' PSA in the wake of 9/11. Boy, David, when you hear that, what do you think?
Oh, boy, I remember being there the day he made that. And he made a series of them, and that was one. And the other one was one I was talking about, is look for the helpers. And I just think, you know, that's perfect advice, because we can't do much. But we can do what he said, is to find out how much they do know. Wise advice, I think, to find out how much they know and then try to deal with it, and to let them know that we'll do our best to take care of them. Other than that, what are we going to say? We can't change what just happened, and it's just overwhelming. But I think that simple advice, in a way, when you think of it, it's basically simple advice, but so wise.
Very.
And that was Fred. You know, and to write something like that you heard and your listeners heard, is not easy. To take some statement like that and put it into 30 seconds and make it helpful is hard, I think. But he did it. And that was Fred. What you just heard there, that's who he was, and that's how he thought about children. Very. And what they hear and what they're exposed to, and how television, in turn, can help them. And I think that you may have had a radio spot. I know the spots were sent out to radio stations and to television stations. And so, how did you get that? Was it in your library?
In the archive.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, good. And you know, it's something you could play from time to time when there is a catastrophe, and it seems like we've been having a lot of them lately. But I think I would keep it handy. Unfortunately, keep it handy.
I think you're right, David. 1968. Somebody referred to this, and I can't remember who it was, but it was an historian, a famed historian, said 1968 was the year the United States had a nervous breakdown. And I think it's interesting that Mr. Rogers comes on the air February 19th, 1968, early in the year. Dr. Martin Luther King is assassinated 2 months later. Bobby Kennedy that August. Men walk on the moon. Lyndon Johnson doesn't run for president again. We have the big thing at the political convention that year in Chicago. That was awful. Richard Nixon gets elected. You know, for those who don't believe or do believe in a higher power, whatever they call it, church, interesting timing. That's the year Mr. Rogers came on.
Yes. Now, you're bringing a lot back to me. And a lot did happen. And the reason I spoke earlier about the Bobby Kennedy assassination is that children were hearing that word. You know, there was Martin Luther King, and we were on the air, and then Bobby Kennedy in August. And I remember that day in August. I was getting ready to go into the studio, and I think it happened late or early in the morning or late that evening, and I heard it first when I was getting up in the morning ready to go into the studio, and things really changed. When we went in, we had a show ready to go, but Fred said, no, we want to work on a special half hour for public television so we can address what's just happened for families. And that's what he did. And he talked about the word assassination because children are hearing about it. And he talked about angry feelings. And you don't solve any angry feelings by acting on it. There's alternative ways of this is to children, of dealing with your angry feelings. Now, you know, I don't know if that's going to change the world, but it certainly can be helpful at the time of this is all going on. And you're right, Chicago was happening too. Many of your listeners would remember, but I don't think you would remember Chicago, do you?
I wasn't alive then, but I do. I've read it. 68 is an interesting year,
And it was you're bringing up a lot of turmoil that was happening that year. And I guess it's ironic that we came on and went national that one year, and right away Fred was helping as best he could through television, the daily program, of course, we were producing, and it was addressing generically things like angry feelings and dealing with people and being helpful to others. It sounds a little pat, but it's not. You know, when you think of it, I think the advice, just the song alone. He when he did his work with children, he was assigned to view children at play and go to daycare centers and observe children. And one little boy said, now, Mr. Rogers, what do you do, this is the actual words, what do you do with the mad that you feel so mad you could bite? And that's what the little boy said to Fred, and Fred remembered that and turned it into a song about angry feelings, you know, to give children alternative ways of dealing with anger and frustration. And he put it into songs, and then the whole program dealt with that concept. So it was a breakthrough in television, I think, and a lot of adults, I think, at the time, and that's why this 50th anniversary, I think, is so important, because I think a lot of adults say, oh, it's a nice little kiddie show, but I don't know if, and I'm not saying every adult, but I think a lot of it just dismissed it as a nice little kiddie show, and there was so much more than that, the depth to it and the soul it had. It has, I guess, because the program still exists. And by the way, for your listeners, if you've not seen Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, public television on, let's see, February 26th, that's next Monday, right? Yeah, next Monday.
Next Monday.
They're going to do a back-to-back Mr. Rogers and Daniel Striped Tiger, and the same theme will be in each one of the programs. They'll show Daniel first and then Mr. Rogers, and the Monday program has Fred dealing with the death of a goldfish, and then the Daniel program has the same theme of Daniel loses his pet fish, and so forth through the week. And so if your listeners want to see, and they've never seen Mr. Rogers, or the children have never seen it, it's a good week to start with, because I'm sure they all know Daniel Tiger, which maybe some of your listeners don't know, is the follow-up to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and it's animated and takes place in the neighborhood of make-believe. All of these terms I'm using, maybe some of your listeners don't know, but here's a chance to find out how he used television.
Go ahead.
I was going to say you've seen some of the programs over the years, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and they're tremendous. What would Fred think of all the hoopla, a movie coming up, Daniel Tiger is still on the air, replaying old episodes? What would he think about this 50th year?
I think he would be pleased and honored. He was so self-effacing that I don't think he would make a big deal about it, but you can't have all this tribute going on and not react to it in some way, because I'm certainly proud that I was part of what he did, and I'm sure, and Joe Negri is too, who your listeners are here meet tomorrow on the air. We both started back on the first program. Joe and the rest of the neighbors came in when their parts were due, when they were taping. But I was there all the time. I started in program one and was, if I wasn't Mr. McFeely on a program, I was there getting the props ready, or later on I was doing the public relations. So I was there every day. The other performers came in as they were needed. But we both started, Joe and I both started the very first week. And it's been such a wonderful experience. Oh, boy. There's an expression which sounds a little cliche, but I'm paraphrasing, but it says something like, when you choose a career, make sure it's something you love to do, because you'll never work a day in your life. You've heard that probably.
Oh, yes.
And I suspect that's what you do, because I think you love what you do, and I certainly did. I loved every day of working. It wasn't a job to me. It was doing something that you love and felt that you were doing something that was worthwhile, that you were part of a larger picture, getting information out to families with young children, and that was very rewarding to me. And frankly, I think that's why I'm still here working in different ways with the program, because it was something I love doing.
You know, it's interesting, David, when it comes to that, I always distinguish between a job and something you love doing. And I always say, something you love doing is something you would do even if they weren't paying you for it. We won't tell anybody that, but...
Yes.
Yeah, would
no,
still
you're right.
Do it.
You're right. I would do it. I couldn't afford to do it, but I would do it. But you know, it's funny you would say that, because when I first started at WQED, that's the station, the public station, the studio where we taped the program in Pittsburgh, I did volunteer. I had another job at the Pittsburgh Playhouse, the theater in Pittsburgh. And when I had time, I would schedule volunteer hours at WQED to learn about television, and I love being part of the concept of public television, and that's where that's how I became involved with the program. And I can tell you actually how I became involved is that in the summer of 1967, after volunteering the winter and spring of 66-67, I went to Europe to meet my cousin, who was in the Navy at the time. And I traveled around Europe for the summer and on a budget of $5 a day. You could do it then. But I got a telegram from a friend of mine, a mutual friend of Fred Rogers and of mine. And he said, Fred Rogers has gotten underwriting to take Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood national. There was a regional version of it, but it didn't. Wasn't all over the country. And to make a long story short, he set up an interview with me, with Fred Rogers, and I met with Fred for about an hour, and he had talked to other people, but I guess something clicked, and he hired me right on the spot, and here I am talking to you 50 years later. It's remarkable. My life really changed on and that interview. And had I not received that telegram in Europe, or it was actually in London. Then, of course, there was no internet or computers, or there were telephones and telegrams, and that's how you communicated. And had I not received that, I think I wouldn't be talking to you now. It would have been a different. So it was, and you know, it's the kindness of strangers. That saying, this in this case. My friend wasn't a stranger, but he was being kind by searching me out and taking the time to send a telegram to me and telling me all of this and setting up the interview. He has since passed away, but he was a close friend and very helpful. So his name is Bob McCulley, and I have him to thank for talking to you right now.
What? David, you know, one of the things that is we learned, and I don't think most people know through your travels here to WWGH, was that not only were you Mr. McFeely, not only were you part of the cast and crew, you were the publicity man. You set up the talk show appearances and the things that Mr. Rogers would do. So I think from the publicity side, I'm interested to hear what you think about the movie, Oscar winner, Tom Hanks, not bad.
Well, that's I think that Tom Hanks will pull it off. In just recently, in fact, this past weekend, my son and I went to see the current movie he's in called The Post, about the Pentagon Papers.
Oh, yes.
And I was curious just to see how he'd portray Brent Baddeley, the editor of The Post, the Washington Post. And he did a good job, but and I think it will, his portrayal of Fred, and this is just my sort of looking ahead, he'll probably do some sort of a hybrid. I think there'll be Tom Hanks will be in the character, but I think Fred will be in there too. I think he'll pull it off, and I, you know, Fred would be delighted, because one of Fred's favorite movies was Forrest Gump. He went to see that over and over. He loved that movie, and he loved Tom Hanks in it. So Fred would be pleased.
Wonderful.
And I think if the PR wise, Tom Hanks is a name that I think people go to see no matter what movie he's in.
Oh, it'll be a big movie.
Yeah, so he'll open a movie, that's what they call the trade. It'll open well, because it has a name attached to it.
You know, David, and certainly nothing against Tom Hanks, Oscar winner, great actor, but you know who when I first heard that the movie was being announced, I honestly thought of Michael Keaton.
Oh, yes.
Because
Michael could do it. I think, yes, he could do it. He certainly knew Fred.
Well, that's what we should tell people. Michael Keaton, the famed actor from Batman, and portrayed Ray Kroc wonderfully.
Yes, he did.
In The
he
Founder.
Did.
So he knew Fred.
I don't know if Michael has done any other biographies except for, you know, portraying a real, an actual person, except Kroc. The irony is that Fred was a good friend of Joan Kroc. Ray Kroc's last wife, and gave our company a nice donation to produce more programs. So they were good friends. I think, you know, another person that people have mentioned to me, other than Michael and Tom Hanks, was Daniel Day-Lewis.
Mm.
I've had about three people that said that, too, because they saw his current movie. But I think of all of them, Tom Hanks maybe has the less of an edge. Michael is very funny, and he's got a slight brashness about him, a cockiness about him, too, that Fred doesn't have. And Tom Hanks doesn't have it as much as Michael does. But I think you're right. I think they both could do it, but it seems to be Tom Hanks now. That's the that's the chosen person.
Well,
since you mentioned Michael, I think I will plug a program that's coming up on public television. I imagine the Columbus Public Television will be showing it on the same night. It's March 6th. There's a documentary that public television has produced called It's You I Like, and Michael is hosting that.
Ah, wonderful.
And they have interviews with Whoopi Goldberg and John, the actor, Lithgow, and Isaac Perlman and Yo-Yo Ma are in it, and I'm in it, and so is Joe Negri. We've been interviewed for it. And it'll be on public television March 6th, 8 o'clock in the evening. So I hope your listeners get a chance to watch it. It's a pledge special, so you'll have to put up with the pledges. But eventually it'll be shown without pledge breaks, too. But they're introducing it during the pledge week. So
and for those,
I would think it would be on the Columbus station. That's the closest station to you all, right?
For those who are interested, WOSU is the Columbus PBS affiliate, and that's Channel 12 on cable and TV 39 on the antenna. So that's
and that's where the program I mentioned earlier, the two back-to-back, would be shown, too, in your area. Of course, they could eventually probably see PBS Kids online shows some of the older episodes, too, but they won't show that right away. It'll be on the air first.
David, when I first heard about the movie, one thing that struck me was a conversation you and I had on the air when you were here about two years ago now. And I remember you saying that Mr. Rogers got a lot of requests to do things, but there were some he just wouldn't do because he didn't like what might happen. And there was a very careful process about that. Do you have any worries about the movie? Do we know what the movie? How will the movie go? Have you seen the script?
No, of the Tom Hanks movie. Are you talking
yes,
about?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even in production yet.
Right.
I can only speculate, and you know, it's really hard to say. It according to what I have read, and this is really. I guess the negotiations were between our company and the film company, and I guess Tom Hanks too. But there was a period of time when an interviewer came from, of all magazines, Esquire magazine, to do a cover story on Fred. And I think the interviewer came with a sort of a chip on his shoulder, and it was an assignment, and I don't think he didn't have any children, and I don't think he knew the program that well, but he was coming, to see if there was any skeletons in the closet. Of course, there wasn't. But he came with a chip, I would guess. To make a long story short, Fred totally changed his life and his outlook on life in the week that this interviewer spent with Fred. And that seems to be the basis for this movie. Now, I don't know how they'll open it up from that, but I hope that is interpreted correctly. You know, and it may start out, this is just my assumption. It's not what's going to happen. It's my assumption. that they could start out the movie with the reporter having a difficult time in his life, which he did. And then his assignment takes him to meet Fred, and that changes his life. So it could be from the point of view of the reporter. I don't know. And then Fred is the one that changes his life. So we'll see.
Do you remember this experience?
Pardon me?
I said, what do you remember about the true experience that actually happened?
As you mentioned earlier, I was doing the public relations at the time this was all happening, and I got the first call from the reporter saying that he'd like to set up some time to meet with Fred Rogers. I said, well, they'll be in New York taping a segment, and Fred had kept an apartment in New York City where the reporter met him, and I would talk to the reporter periodically to see if he got what he needed and arrange for him to come to the studio to watch some taping there. And I could see him changing, and it did. I remember him telling me that, too, that how much how powerful he thought Fred was, powerful in the sense of his outlook on life and his confidence he had. Fred knew himself well. He knew what he was doing. He was a strong man, and I think part of that was his faith. Fred was as your listeners may or may not know, Fred was an ordained minister. He didn't have a church, but he studied to be a minister and was ordained to work with families and children through the media. And I think all of that really impressed this reporter. And I wasn't in on the actual first interview, but I think that he spent a couple hours with him, and this was no kiddie show host that sings songs and then goes home. He lived what he preached, so to speak, and I think that really changed this. You could see the reporter's attitude changing during the time he spent with us, and so that.
That's a good plot.
And going back to your question, do I have any concerns? Well, in a way, I do. I would like to see it portrayed the way it happened, and I guess they'll have to set up the story first of the reporter coming there somewhat begrudgingly. So we'll see.
Do you know if this reporter is still with us?
Oh, yes, he's very much. His name is, it's not a secret, his name is Tom Janot.
Tom Janot.
And it's been mentioned in the you yourself could find the Esquire article and read it. I don't know if you ever have. It's readable. It's not a secret. But going back to your question, if I had any concerns, that's the period of time I think they're talking about. Now, I don't know how the script would evolve from there, but that seems to be what it's a chunk of the movie will be, let's say. I have no insight beyond that, other than that's the period of time that they're focusing on for now. That's all I know. I really know that. To my knowledge, I don't know if the script has been totally written. They won't go into production till the fall of this year, and it won't come out till sometime in 2019.
David.
Right now, I that's about all I know.
Early stage.
I do have a concern how it'll turn out, and I hope it comes. And I have faith in that it will be a good picture and represent Fred well. I think Tom Hanks is he'll make sure it does, I'm sure.
Now, this would be my guess only, but if that ends up being the plot of this movie, I would guess you would be represented some way in this as setting up the, or just as Mr. McFeely. Now, here, now I don't want to tell people how to run their movie, but it would be interesting if Michael Keaton played the reporter or played you in the movie.
Yes. You know, that's you know, it probably has something to do with their agents too. Would Michael's agent let him do a supporting role? I don't know. You know, that's, it's all sort of, but it would be, it would be interesting if he played the review. Yes, it would be very much so.
And the only other thing I would like I said, I don't want to tell people how to run their movie, but you should be in there in some way. Doing some, well, would you do it?
Yeah, I would do it as a cameo. Maybe there, it's a cameo somewhere, or maybe I could play myself as the PR person. You know, and I don't know. You know, it's there's so many as you well know. You know, they can start out with a script, and then by the time they get the production script written, it could be entirely different. Movies are like that. They evolve, I think, you know, from the first script written to the final shooting script. So many things could happen over the period of time. But I trust with Tom Hanks being the star, it will be a movie that does that represents Fred well. That's my faith, I guess.
I think you're right, and I think, you know, to have you in there, to have a guy who was so involved, continuity, whatever the part may be in the movie, you know, the best documentary, I think, documentary movie that I think I ever saw was Man on the Moon with Andy Kaufman. And what I thought they did so well was Judd Hirsch went back and played his character. It was focused on Andy, and of course Andy was gone, so you had Jim Carrey. But they used Danny DeVito, played Louie, and, you know, they did the things they did, and I think that's important.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that, yes. And funny you mentioned Andy Kaufman, because, again, with my PR hat on, Fred was on the David Letterman show one evening when he was... when Letterman was shooting at NBC. He then moved to CBS, but at NBC, Fred was on, and the guests that night were, of course, Fred Rogers, Julie Andrews, and Andy. And Andy Kaufman came up to us. We were standing there waiting for Fred to get into the makeup room, and Andy Kaufman just came out and said, "You know, Mr. Rogers, I love your work." And I believe it. You never knew about Andy Kaufman because he was such a character. But it was interesting to hear him say that. You know, he wasn't being joking. That's not really the word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he wasn't putting on a show.
Flip.
Yeah.
He was serious. He was
genuine.
Serious when he said that. He wasn't being his character, his persona, but he was being Andy, I believe, you know, that. But it's interesting you should mention that. I forgot about that movie, but I do remember seeing it, and I thought Jim Carrey did a wonderful job portraying him. And that's interesting. I forgot because, yeah, he was in that Taxi TV series, right?
Right, and they brought the entire cast.
I forgot about that. Well, let's see. Maybe
let's hope.
I would certainly be a part of it if asked, so I'm here. They have my phone number.
There you go. Well, and it should be. I think it's just, it would be important to all of us who have been fans. David, you have a documentary, which many people I know and Marion have seen because of your visits here, Speedy Delivery. You know, this is a big year for you, age-wise, yourself, coming up later this year. Do you still like it? Do you still like going out as Mr. McFeely? Do you still like signing the pictures and meeting people?
Oh, I do. That's one of my favorite things to do. You know, now this year it's been before this year it's been so busy with different events that I have to go through the Fred Rogers Company because I don't want to do something and somebody else has already booked something for us. So there's a lot happening. But in fact, yesterday. It's funny you should ask that. I was at the Heinz History Center. If any of your listeners are ever in Pittsburgh, the Heinz History Center has the original set on permanent display, the castle, the tree, the interior, the props. Mr. McFeely's bike is there. And there was a group of people came in from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, as part of a package that the local public station in Harrisburg set up. And it was interview, a radio broadcast from their station, of the radio station at the Harrisburg station. They did it, recorded it at the studio, the center, the museum. And I was part of that along with our producer. At any rate, I stayed afterwards and as me, David Newell, who played McFeely, and signed autographs for these were all adults. There might be there were two children there, and these are all people whose children grew up with the program, or they grew up with it. I would say the age range was, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. This group of people who came in, and you know, I signed. We had pictures taken, and I enjoy the process of meeting people and finding out, you know, where they live and what they did for a living and about their children. And the stories that I've gotten over the years were wonderful. And I do, yes. So to answer your questions, I still enjoy. It's meeting the people that I enjoy.
David, for me, through your three visits here. And I think I could have only experienced this in person. You were one of the most fascinating people I've ever talked to for this reason, because I think there's an interesting dichotomy. David Newell looks nothing like Mr. McFeely. But when you would be interviewing you in the McFeely costume, sometimes you'd refer David and sometimes you'd say McFeely. How close are the two guys?
I think they're pretty close. And, you know, I think Fred saw that, too. You know, when he hired me, this will maybe explain it. I was hired to do the props and be in charge of all the production work. That was my main job. But he said, oh, you know, before you leave, I'd like also for you to do one of the characters on the program. And I said, really? And he said, yes, I'm writing in a delivery man. And I want you to play it. And I want the delivery man to be in a hurry and all the time, and speedy delivery. And because he even said, you speak fast. My voice, I talk fast. And Fred picked up on that. And I think the reason he waited till the end, till he hired me, and then he said, oh, and I'd like you to do the delivery man. I think he was sort of processing it and he'll be good as the delivery man, too. So I that's why he didn't tell me right away, I think. Now, what was your question? Yes, so it is a lot of me. And Fred would take interest that I had as David and incorporate them in the McFeely character. Like, I love film, so he'd have me taking film sometime and showing them to him. And I liked collecting things, and he had me showing a collection of things that I collected. And I love going to flea markets too, and we did a remote where Mr. McFeely went to flea markets and sold things. So all of those elements of David he put into McFeely. So yes, I think they intertwine.
I think you're right. We have about 3 minutes left, and I want to make sure to get this part in. The documentary is great. I love it. It's Speedy Delivery, and one of the great parts of that is Fred came up with a song for you that you didn't necessarily I don't want to say didn't like performing, but didn't feel you had the musical ability. But he used to like to put that on you.
Yes, he did. Yes. And sometimes that your listeners may not know, we had, if we had a extra 30 seconds maybe, and Fred would see the time that the floor manager was giving him, he would say, oh, well, we can fill this out by having McFeely sing a song. I think he was thinking that in his head as we were doing the show. He said, Mr. McFeely, before you go, can you sing your Speedy Delivery song? And so I'd do it. It was, if there's anything you want, if there's anything you need, McFeely's Delivery brings it to you at a speed. And it would be, and that was it. And he would stand there as I was doing that and sort of smile and chuckle to himself and had the best time putting me through that. He wasn't being mean, but he enjoyed it. And I don't think he would have asked me to do it had I not been able to bring it off. But I did. And I would ham it up a little bit as I was doing it. But by the way, that the Speedy Delivery documentary is still available, and people can go to SpeedyDeliveryMovie.com, SpeedyDeliveryMovie.com, and buy it if they like.
David,
and there's so many things coming up. I think, and Joe can tell you more tomorrow about the documentary on March 6th, and then of course February 26th is the back-to-back Mr. Rogers and Daniel Tiger. And you know, in June, there's a theatrical documentary coming out, a totally different one than's on PBS on March 6th. June 8th, there's one calling Won't You Be My Neighbor. That'll be in theaters. That's the first thing that'll be in theaters. And then, of course, the Tom Hanks movie would be the following year. So there's a lot happening. Oh, and there's a postage stamp dedication on March 23rd. Fred and King Friday will be on a postage stamp.
March 23rd,
and the Fred Rogers Studio at WQED in Pittsburgh. And if anybody is in Pittsburgh, it's open to the public, the dedication, and I think I'll be delivering the stamp to the postmaster.
He'll
be there from D.C.
So a lot's
happening.
If Mr. Rogers' favorite delivery man isn't there on that day, I'll be disappointed.
Well, I'll be there.
Yes.
I'll be there making my delivery, and the irony is it's in the same place where we did all those programs, in the very studio where we did the program. So perfect.
March 23rd.
March 23rd. Look for in your local post offices on March 23rd and afterwards to get the first day edition of Mr. Rogers. Any stamp collectors listening, that's coming up, so... make a note of it.
And I want to mention this. We will plug the programs, but I want to mention this. Don't forget that these museums, the Heinz Museum, the March 23rd dedication of the postage stamp, all of these things that David has talked with us about, don't forget, Pittsburgh's only about 4 hours from Marion. So if you want to take a trip, this is a day trip. You don't even have to get a hotel overnight if you don't want to. And you can still come back if you're a seasoned driver who just likes to hit the road. And before we wrap up on this 50th anniversary, very quickly, with 20 seconds, David, what's the legacy of the show 50 years later?
50 years from now, you mean?
What is it today? What do you think the legacy is of the show?
I think the legacy is a program that was ahead of its time, and I think it still is. And Fred was a pioneer. And I think 50 years from now, it'll still be relevant because what he talked about, it's the content that's the legacy, I think. What he talked about and how he used television to help families.
Yeah, and to wrap up, what I want to say is, because as people know, Mr. McFeely has been here, David Newell, 3 times, and he has worn the costume, and he's been in our popcorn parade, and there are always people, not just people at the station, but I know it meant so much to Charlie Evers, it meant so much to Fred Malone, who was here, and Sean Kraft, and Terry Tackett, and Adam Lepp, talk about it all the time, that you came here in your costume, and I run into people who saw you in the parade who still have such memories of that. You gave Marion, Ohio a great gift. I hope the gifts aren't over. We'll see as time goes on, but you have been so kind to me, and I will never be able to repay that. You are an original and a classic.
Well, thank you very much, Scott, and you are too, and I can tell you love what you do. and you're a very good interviewer. You've asked questions today that I've not been asked before. So there you go. You're an original, too.
David Newell, Mr. McFeely, it wouldn't have been right if we couldn't have had here on the 50th anniversary of the debut of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, February 19th, 1968. David, speedy delivery to you. Talk with you soon.
Okay, bye-bye, Scott. Speedy delivery.
.us, The Protector Show, every Friday morning.
This is Charlie Evers, and you can catch Marianne Michaels, Scott Spears, and myself